rabbis were captured and they were brought to the slave markets of originally Alexandria, and then later they were brought to the slave markets of Morocco and Algeria. And the first they were brought to Alexandria, they didn't fetch a high enough price, probably because the Jews in Alexandria had their own rabbis and did not feel the necessity for ransoming other rabbis at an exorbitant, everybody knows what a rabbi is worth, and they didn't want to overpay. However, when they brought the four captives west to the slave markets of Tunis and of Fez, the Jews there saw a golden opportunity, because they were unable to attract rabbis of any stature. It was, what shall we say, it was the Western frontier, right? It was like Dodge City in the 1880s. So you couldn't get great rabbinic leadership that willingly would come there. So the Jews of those communities made a striking deal. They went to the rabbis, they said to the captors, to the pirates, before we bid on them, we'd like to talk to them. And they went to them and they said, listen, we'll ransom you. We'll ransom you for whatever they ask, but on the condition that you stay and be our leader. On this condition that you stay in our communities and help build it, that you try and build a yeshiva here for our children, that you answer our problems, in other words, that you serve as our spiritual leaders. And the rabbis were faced with the difficult choice of whether to remain with the pirates or go with the Balabatim. But they finally decided that they would accept the offer. And that is how, according to the legend, that is how the scene began to shift, because now North Africa had people of greatness, had people of great stature. And as we know in the history of American Jewry, especially in the traditional camp, that it only really requires a few people to make a difference. And those few people who are devoted to building authentic, strong Judaism and are very stubborn about it, so they're able to do it. And they're able to do it within a generation, two generations. That's what happened here. They accepted the offer. Eventually they brought their families there. Students emigrated to come and learn with them, to study in their yeshivas, and they set a standard of life and made demands upon the Jewish community in North Africa that changed the entire complexion of Jewish life in North Africa. So that within 50, 80 years, by the year 900, by the time that Rabbeinu Sadia was dead, and Rabbeinu Shrira was about to mount the throne of the Gaonet in Bavel, North African Jewry no longer felt themselves subservient to Babylonian rule and to Babylonian demands. In fact, they were the ones that contributed to the demise of Bavel as the center of Jewish life, because they stopped asking questions to Bavel, and they, in a certain sense, curtailed their economic support of the Babylonian yeshivas, and they provided a competitive location for what Bavel had to offer. And the West was opening up. North Africa was populated by two tribes, the Berbers and the Moors. The Berbers were Arabs, were very close to the Arabs. The Moors were Africans of dark skin, but of Caucasian features.